this is Justice Radio, a weekly show on WMPG, with your hosts Mackenzie Kelly and Linda Small. Today we're speaking with Valerie Captimo, who studied Peace and Reconciliation at the University of Maine Graduate School. Valerie is a podcaster and producer and host of Prison Pod Productions.
First, a little bit about us. My name is Mackenzie Kelly, a recovery coach coordinator and peer mentor for Healthy Acadia and the program director of Reentry Sisters.
And I'm Linda Small, a project coordinator with Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition and ED of Reentry Sisters, an organization that specializes in helping women and girls return home from prison. And you can learn more about us on our website at reentrysisters.org.
Thank you so much, Val, for being here on our show. Welcome. Can you share a little with our audience your background and what brings you to social justice work and podcasting?
Well, believe it or not, my work in prison work started at WMPG. When I was a DJ there, I was covering Leonard Peltier, who was a political prisoner, and he was part of the American Indian Movement, and he was in federal prison. And he, this year, in January, was just released. And he was doing life. He is under house arrest permanently, but he's home.
Well, that's one form of a success story.
Yeah. So that's where it started. I was doing those updates on Leonard Peltier while I was doing a radio show there, Echoes in the Wind. And there was people that were at Maine Correctional Center working in the kitchen and in the laundry, and they were listening to the show. So they started writing about, hey, how come you're not doing anything about prisons in Maine? And that's where it started. And that was in 1997. And in 2000, a friend of mine, Rick Wilson, and I started going in and doing volunteer work at Maine Correctional. And then later on down the line, we started a nonprofit in 2003.
Wow, that's a fascinating history. And I love that you had fans on the inside that you didn't even know you had. That's fabulous. So you already had, let's say, your prison podcast, and then, right, your fans in Maine were listening and asking you to write some stories about what's happening in Maine. Can you tell us a little bit about your research, or how did you determine who your guests are on your show?
Originally, I did many other things. I was in school from 2007 until 2021. I can't believe I'm saying that. But it took time. I took gaps off. But as far as my guest went, I was already had connections at the Maine State Prison. I got involved with the Maine Prison Reentry Network and started meeting people through there. And it started growing. And then I was involved with the Awakening Exchange, which was out of the Maine State Prison, run by Stephen Matthew Clark. And that gave me an opportunity to meet people around the world in a common space online. And that's where a lot of my first guests were coming from.
Yeah. So just a follow-up to that about your guests. I mean, what is the message that you're sending, sort of your overall message here with your podcast?
It's to save lives, restore hope, reduce suffering and recidivism.
And I love that. Does that kind of tie into what made you want to work with residents in prison?
I think it goes all the way back to when I was in high school, believe it or not. I had a friend of mine who went to the Maine Youth Center, and when he came home, he wasn't quite the same. And I decided I wanted to work in juvenile corrections, but as life has it, it had other plans for me, and I was married young, had children young, and put everything on the back burner. And then when I started getting the letters from the prisons, I also had a friend who worked at Cumberland County Jail. And they were doing a community integration program where they were letting some of the people in work programs, like go to the university or go visit the museums, different places where they were out in public and around people. And WMPG let them come in and sit on my radio show. So I started doing their stories, and it just hooked me. It was like, somebody needs to tell people's stories. And then I decided, well, wait a minute, it shouldn't be someone telling their stories, it should be them telling their stories. So that's really where it started. Was I felt there were so many voices inside, so many intelligent people with so much to say, and they were never allowed to. So my letters, that's one thing unique about my podcast, is I do have a P.O. box, which is Post Office Box 294, Orono, Maine, 04473, where people can write. And a lot of my show ideas come from letters. Just recently, I've been doing some more on hope because it seems like a lot of people that are in solitary are losing their hope. And I want to start getting messages of hope in there for them.
That's great. I'm so glad that some of your show ideas come from letters. Are you allowed to actually have some of the residents be on your show, or how does that work?
It is very, I don't want to say tricky. It's different from facility to facility. I just got permission to do a phone interview with somebody that is in California, without really any permission at all, which really surprised me. They just sent me the policy and they said, this is our policy. But I'm not allowed to interview without facility permission, but I am allowed to record their calls. Because when you get a call from a prison, it says this call may be monitored and recorded. That goes for both ends. You're protected on both ends. So I do recordings from death row, but I don't do interviews, and those are on YouTube. I also record the North Carolina field ministers. There's a couple of facilities that don't allow me to record them. So now what I'm doing is I'm taking their letters and changing them into artificial intelligence voices to match their voice the best I can. And then we're getting the messages out that way.
Oh, that is so fantastic, Valerie. I mean, we're talking about people who are traditionally silenced and invisibilized. And when we talk about getting stories out there and changing narratives, I think it's so important for people to hear directly from the people who are in prison. And I remember you said calling people intelligent. Folks would be so amazed at the amount of talent and care and creativity that folks on the inside have. And I want to ask you about something you mentioned earlier, that there were calls for hope. And so tell me about that. How do you bring people on the inside hope through your podcast?
I try to find as many guests as I can that work in different fields, whether it's addictions or abuse, people that have survived through it and have come out on the other side doing well, so that they can see that people have bad days and horrible lives, but you can recover from that and you can move on from that. So I try to find a lot of people in that area. I've also had some people from the Hinda Institute on, and they have some wonderful perspectives when it comes to incarceration.
Thank you for that, Val. I love the idea of converting letters into voices. And so how does that work? I mean, do you put those on your podcast? Were those the ones that you put on YouTube? And let's tell our audience how they can listen to those.
Okay, so the best way to find all my information is to go to prisonpod.org, which is my website. It says that I'm revamping it, which I am, but there's a link there to my link tree, and that has everything on it. It has YouTube, it has the podcast by itself, and it also has my Bonfire account, which is all my merchandise I just started selling.
And so when people write to you, do they know that you're going to be putting voice to their words? Do you get permission for that ahead of time?
So there's the only ones I've done that with is the field ministers, and it's only the ones that I'm allowed to record. It is very time consuming because I have to type all of it in, and you have to like put in your pauses. And if you have an accent on a word, sometimes it sounds artificial. So there's ways of fixing that. So I'm really picky about doing that. What it is it's guys that can't be recorded. They'll send me the letter and say, I know you've done this for so and so. Could you do this for me?
Can you maybe relay to our audience one of the most compelling stories you've heard from one of the people inside who have written to you or reached out to you?
I have somebody that is a father, and he went in when his son was only 3 years old. And he tells his story about how it was when his son came to visit him, and there was that divide between them. And he was trying to turn the knob and trying to reach for him. And his telling that story just, it tore my heart out because I could just feel that, thinking of my child on the other side. And this is a father. We usually hear these stories from mothers that are incarcerated, how it affects them. But with Lucas, he has spent his whole time he's been incarcerated concentrating on his son. And he recorded a piece with me talking to other parents saying, I know how hard it is, but you have to keep doing it. Keep that line of communication open. So he was one of my favorites. His story is amazing. And I also have another person, his name's Robert Odom, who's an artist. And his artwork look like photographs, the drawings he does of people. And he talks about how therapeutic art is in prison and how many prisons do not have programs or materials, or in death row, it's paper. They can't get paper. They can't get canvases.
Wow.
It's a very limited thing.
Wow, that's... It's sad to hear of the different stories, right? You know, because normally we work with mostly women. So I do think it's great when men vocalize that they have families that they support and, you know, that sort of situation. You are listening to Justice Radio with your host, Mackenzie Kelly and Linda Small. Today, we are speaking with Valerie Shaw Cartonio about her work as a host of Prison Podcast. And I wanted to talk about a little bit about the Carolina Field Ministers. I've heard you say it a couple times, so I was
okay.
A little bit interested.
So the North Carolina Field Ministers is a pretty unique program. They go to college at Nash Correctional, and they take ministers, people who want to go to college to be a minister, throughout all of North Carolina's facilities. So I think I have 8 facilities that have field ministers at them. They go to Nash Correctional for 4 years, and they go and they get their bachelor's degree in theology and pastoral counseling. Then after that's done, they go back to the facilities that they're housed in. Most of them are life without parole, and they become counselors in their facility, which is, to me, such a wonderful thing because you have the level of peer support, and it's a more trusting environment, I think, because it's somebody that's housed there with you. It's not the man, you know? So it's a different environment for them. And I just love what they are doing. The guys are incredible. There's multiple ones that have recorded, and they are on YouTube under North Carolina Field Ministers. It's not associated with the program that does, you know, the college. That's just a project that I've done. Tim Johnson, he is the one who reached out from Nash to me. And he also writes a magazine within the prison. And it's a professional magazine, color magazine, that is now available online. And I wish I had it with me here so I could show it. But if you look up anything about Nash Correctional and prison newspapers, it'll come up.
Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the you explaining that. So I'm wondering, because I do remember you talking about the podcast being available to people who are incarcerated. Is that something that has been happening?
It has. So I have 3 seasons that are on Edovo tablets. Unfortunately, Edovo has changed their platform of uploading 3 different times, and I cannot figure it out this time. So I think very soon I may be moving to another platform. That hasn't happened. But right now, last year, I reached 74,000 people. I had 74,000 downloads.
Wow.
So, and the podcast is available to 1 million incarcerated learners.
That is just amazing. I mean, I remember being on the tablet and trying to find some worthwhile content. So I totally would have appreciated listening to your podcast while I was in. I know that.
And it's, you know, I've had so much support from the people inside. You know, we talk about, you know, people don't think about the people inside, but I have a couple of field ministers, and I swear they're psychic, because I can be having a lousy day and I'll open up the tablet app to go in and read their text, and it will be, good morning, it's such a beautiful day here. And I'm thinking, they're incarcerated for the rest of their life, and they're seeing the beauty in the day. And I just want to slap myself and say, wake up, you know, life is much better than it.
So they're actually able to text you from their tablets or.
I text with 41 people.
Wow.
Wow. And I do want to mention that I am running on donations. I am not making any money right now off the podcast. I don't have sponsors. I don't do advertising. I am looking for sponsors for season 5. So if anyone out there listening is interested in sponsoring the Prison Pod, I'd love to hear from you. I
Yeah.
also want to mention we incarcerated persons that have so much talent. On my website, prisonpod.org, I have a list of books, and many of those are people that are currently incarcerated that have written those. So if you want to see something firsthand from people that are inside, it's a good place to look for some books.
Oh, that's fantastic. That reminds me of a cookbook that's been recently published by a man at the Maine State Prison. So I think that's fabulous that you offer that on your website.
Is it a cookbook of commissary foods?
It is. It
That's
is. So
funny.
that, your average person can see what it's like. How do you prepare a meal? Or they're so creative in making desserts and appetizers and full meals out of something that you would never think to go and buy yourself at the grocery store.
Yeah.
So it's truly impressive. So when you talk about talent and creativity, it is absolutely there.
Oh, the artists that are there are unbelievable. I have quite a bit of artwork right now that people have sent me over the years. I would love to do an art show with it. I just haven't been organized enough yet to do it.
Oh, that's wonderful, Valerie. We at Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition does an art show usually 2 or 3 times a year. And so you don't have to pull that all together by yourself. Maybe we could do a collaboration and get
Yeah.
that artwork together with ours.
I know you've
Yeah.
been in Bangor before. It'd be great to see you here again.
Yes, that would be fantastic. That's something that we should continue to have a conversation about. I think it's so important. What the work that you're doing is public awareness. So you're reaching audiences on the inside and audiences on the outside. And there's not many that are bridging that particular gap. And so I'm really intrigued about, have you ever had a show where you've had sort of that inside outside collaboration, somebody from the inside and somebody on the outside of the show at the same time?
I haven't yet, but that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm
That
always
could be a
looking for
fascinating conversation.
it could be, yes. Yeah. There's you have to be so careful with, those rules and regulations of who they can associate when they come out. They can't be on probation. And so that would be the only thing that I would have to look at there, but that's a good idea. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
They can't be on probation to be on your show?
No, that's not what I mean. If you're on probation, you know how they have regulations about who you can hang with and who you can associate
Oh.
with. So I don't know how that would work for the person that's inside or the person on the outside as far as the legalities.
Right. I
Yeah.
think, one of the things that our listeners should know when somebody leaves, if they are on probation or have any types of surveillance post-incarceration, there is a long list of things that you can and cannot do. And so I appreciate you being mindful of that and not getting anybody into trouble. And I think what we miss the larger picture there, because when you're on the inside, you're separated from your loved ones. And so you create families on the inside. And now you have to leave those families. So you're separated from your family outside. Now you're separated from your inside family. And I don't think what people understand is that those connections are vital, right, to your overall wellness. And so making that determination and arbitrary separation of people that you have this shared experience with, is not necessarily good for anybody's mental health or well-being.
I was really fortunate that I was inside so many different facilities within the state for 15 years and in different capacities because I was as a volunteer, but then I worked for a mental health agency where I still was doing the work once there. And I was seeing people. So I've seen people inside and I've worked with people coming home with reentry. I've worked with facilities doing reentry planning too. So I've seen a lot of the different components of incarceration and where those gaps do need to be filled in.
Yeah, and maybe you want to help our listeners understand that a little bit. What do you see as some of the major gaps in reentry today?
Oh boy, we
Where
don't
do you
have enough
start,
time.
right?
Hey, right. I think, first of all, people have got this opinion that people need to get out and go to work immediately. That's a great idea. But if you've been in prison for 15 or 20 years, which most of the people that I saw coming out had very long sentences, they can't come out and go to work. I mean, they just can't. They're lucky if they can come out of their stinking room. And you want them to go to work where you've got all this noise and people, and they're used to watching their back all the time, and they don't know how to react, and it's the overloads of stimulation is just too much. So the first thing they need to do is have housing. They need a safe, supportive place to go for housing, and we do not have enough of that here. I have had more people come out of prison, and I've had to take them to the homeless shelter. And that is the worst feeling in the world, knowing where they came from, that they're going to go someplace, that they're going to feel so vulnerable. So that's number one. I think the other thing is with reentry is we need to start educating the public that the majority of people coming home are of no risk to you. So many people that have been in prison, it's a one-time thing that happened that put them there. They've been through programming and rehabilitation. We need to reduce the stigma of the people coming home. Because if we don't have an open arms with people coming home, how are they going to become part of society and our communities again?
I think those are such important points, Valerie, in particular when we talk about institutionalization. And so, if you've never been incarcerated, it's really hard to empathize with that and to understand the amount of overwhelm that happens by being caged one day and free the next, where you're automatically supposed to flip a switch and just be, a regular person again that blends in. And I want to highlight the second point you made, which is our concept of public safety, right? Which is warped right now by the media, by certain legislators who would rather have us think one way versus another, where we have a false sense of security because we're locking up people. But the fact of the matter is, 95% of the people who are incarcerated are coming home. And so the question is, what kind of people do we want to come home to be our neighbors, work in our grocery stores, be in our churches, in our schools, and all those kinds of things?
That's why there's such a need for programming.
100%. And I know we've said it too before, like there's no such thing as Felon Island. We're coming back to your communities, right? Do you want us like in a rehabilitated state, or where would you prefer us to be, right?
Well, and the workforce is really missing out because they have that stupid box on there, are you a felon? And they don't ever even get through the door to talk to the person. To me, take that box off. If you want to ask that question, if it's legal to ask that question, ask it in an interview. Give the
So
person a chance.
I definitely think they do have ban the box, but I think people are just unready to hear the honest truth, to be honest, and then also the people who are coming out have a hard time explaining what my incarceration looked like, what that looks like for me now. And I do agree with you when you said it's not the greatest idea for people who have been institutionalized to get a job right out of incarceration. Really, I think there needs to be some sort of classes for people to take because it's traumatic going into prison, being in prison, and then traumatic coming out of prison. And then we're trying to figure out how do I live a quote normal life in the community? And nobody can prepare you for what that's going to feel like when you step out those doors.
That's a really important thing to mention too, because people expect you just to step back in, and that's not how it is. It takes a long time to get readjusted. I mean, just think about moving to a new town, how tough that is doing, let alone when you've been completely removed from everything that's normal to you.
Agreed. And I really think what they need is just support. Support from people like you, people like me, and people who might not necessarily understand, but that can empathize and not criticize them for what they've gone through.
I've heard of a program, and I wish I knew where it was because it was on a film that I was watching where they're doing foster care. To me, that's an incredible idea. Take someone their last 2 years in prison, put them in a home with a family or a couple where they can adjust as foster care. Let the state pay them to provide the services that are needed, to take them to their appointments, to get them into job training. What a great way of doing that.
Yeah, definitely
Wow.
agree.
Yeah, I think foster care is an awesome idea. And what a great way to acclimate somebody to life by being in a regular home environment where they haven't been sometimes for decades. And you have that opportunity to slowly, right, reenter society with support, with people who care about you because they've been in a place where no one's cared for a very long time.
And I think especially people that came from an unhealthy home to start with, so they can see the difference and be able to desire to have something different.
Yeah.
Was there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to say?
The only thing was, I meant to mention the virtual reentry conference that's coming up in November, Brick by Brick. I don't know if you guys are aware of that, but you probably would want to attend that. It's only $5, but it's November 6th. And if you go to hopehelphumor.com, that's where you register for it. But it's a virtual all-day reentry conference that they're having, and they have speakers lined up, and it's an all-day event. And I think it's going to be really remarkable. I don't know if you know who Noah Asher is.
No.
You should have his book. It would be really good with the people that you work with. He does a book called Chaos, Overcoming the Overwhelming. And it's in most of the prisons and jails across the country. He's donated like 1 million books.
Wow. Yeah, I'm
Great.
just looking at this now, Brick by Brick, a virtual reentry conference. We will definitely have to check that out, Valerie. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Val, for joining our show. We've learned so much about you and your podcast, and we hope that everybody will tune in to Prison Pod to listen and to support your work.
Thank you so much.
And so we have some exciting new shows coming up on Justice Radio. We're going to explore the legislative process, how you can become involved, and talk to some main organizations about how they envision justice, survivorship, and accountability.
Visit the Justice Radio show page on WMPG.org for archived episodes aired on WMPG, WERU, and WMHB. A big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series.